Hey, this is Anya.
And this is Peter.
And we're from Rock and Roll High School every first and third Wednesday at 8 p.m.
And you're listening to WGXC, Acre, Hudson, Catskill, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears, baby. Wow.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. Today, we will hear about PFAS, the forever chemicals that are in drinking water locally in Caro, in Newburgh, in Hoosick Falls, in the New Lebanon schools, in Nassau. All kinds of places have seen these forever chemicals from firefighting foam and from all kinds of other industrial uses. And New York State is now considering what the limit is going to be for allowable PFAS in drinking water. Rob Hayes of Environmental Advocates has some opinions on that. We'll hear from him this hour. We'll also hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all starts after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
A stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
MV Carbon and Zach Layton perform at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill on Friday, May 6th. WGXC will have a live web stream if you can't make it in person. MV Carbon's work focuses on sonic feedback, sound spatialization, sound morphology, and the transformative and deconstructive interrelationship between sound, image, space, and place. She is performing with Zach Layton, who will open the show. He's a guitarist, composer, curator, and teacher based in Brooklyn and Troy, New York. Tune in or turn out for MV Carbon and Zach Layton Friday, May 6th at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill from 9 to 11 p.m. The first hour will be broadcast live on 90.7 FM, and both hours will have a web stream at wgxc.org.
Do you have 17 cents a day to support a platform for many diverse voices to have their say on the local airwaves? Just 17 cents a day, a monthly $5 recurring donation, can help keep local youth on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. Your monthly sustaining support will keep the airwaves full of music from around the world and around the corner. WGXC needs 500 sustaining supporters to make sure there is one spot on the dial where the community can have access to its own airwaves. Make your pledge today at wgxc.org/donate and do your part to protect an important source of local news, information, and entertainment. With just 17 cents a day, you will do your part to protect your favorite frequency. Become a sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org/donate now.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Food New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom,
This is the WGXE Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Patricia Doxey reports for the Daily Freeman that more than 50 people attended the May 4th forum hosted by Ulster County Executive Pat Ryan, State Senator Michelle Hinchey, and Assemblymember Kevin Cahill in response to the growing outcry from Ulster County residents who have experienced billing problems with the utility Central Hudson Gas and Electric. Quote, frankly, it's absolutely ridiculous that we even have to be here doing this whatsoever, unquote, Ryan said. He said his office has received thousands of, quote, heartbreaking calls about bank accounts being emptied by Central Hudson's auto pay program, of business owners sent electric bills for tens of thousands of dollars, and of residents on fixed incomes who have seen their electric bills skyrocket for no apparent reason. Speaker after speaker during the forum shared stories of being sent bills for outrageous amounts of money, most based on, quote, estimated, unquote, bills that they said presumed electric usage far in excess of what they had ever used before. Quote, I think it's intentional, unquote, said Kingston resident Dante Martin. Quote, stop the pirate billing and stop the nonsense, unquote. Several speakers called the utility's billing practice predatory and called the energy system to be taken out of the hands of a for-profit company and replaced with a public utility. Ryan said all of the comments recorded during the forum would be submitted to the New York State Public Service Commission for his investigation into Central Hudson's customer information system implementation and subsequent billing errors. As of early May 4th, more than 3,600 comments had been posted on the Public Service Commission portal set up as part of the Central Hudson billing investigation. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman.
Governor Kathy Hochul's decision announced May 3rd to make Representative Antonio Delgado lieutenant governor adds another vote to the summer elections in New York with all sorts of cascading effects across the ballots. Delgado will take the state oath of office this month at a date to be determined. Hochul said, and I quote, the only question is the exact timing he will resign from Congress. There is work to be finished before he assumes these responsibilities, end quote. The day before, former Lieutenant Governor Brian Benjamin, recently indicted on corruption charges, removed himself from the ballot after the legislature passed a law to allow political nominees charged with a crime to vacate a party ticket. So now Delgado will appear on the ballot for the statewide primary election for lieutenant governor scheduled for June 28th as Hochul's running mate. Then Spectrum News reports a special election for Delgado's 19th district seat must be set within 10 days of the resignation and must be held within 3 months. Mark Molinaro, the Republican Dutchess County executive who is already running for the seat, will likely be on the ballot against an, at this point, unknown Democrat. Assemblymember Martisa Davila of Brooklyn told City and State about Hochul's decision, and I quote, you left an open seat in Congress. This is what we're trying to avoid, end quote. She said she feels confident that the seat will return to Republican hands now. Davila added, and I quote, she has to live with her own choices, end quote. Other Democrats were more optimistic about retaining the seat. State Senator Brad Holyman of Manhattan told City and State, and I quote, we have strong Democratic candidates, I'm sure, looking at that seat. I would expect a worthy successor in the Democratic nomination, end quote. State Democratic Party Chair Jay Jacobs told City and State that the party has several potential candidates in mind for the seat, but declined to say who exactly. Two local politicians are floating their names so far. Ulster County Executive Pat Ryan, who lost to Delgado in the Democratic primary in 2018, hinted at trying again in a May 3rd tweet. Ryan wrote, referring to the news that the Supreme Court would overturn Roe v. Wade, and I quote, after last night's devastating news, it is clear now more than ever we need champions in Congress who will protect fundamental rights and freedom and fight back against Washington extremists. So stay tuned, end quote. Anonymous sources also claim State Senator Michelle Hinchey of Saugerties may run for the seat. A source with knowledge of the senator's plans said, and I quote, she's assessing where she can best help our communities, whether that's in Albany or Washington, end quote. Hinchey, in her own election, turned the 46th Senate district in the Hudson Valley from Republican control to Democrats in 2020. The source added, and I quote, "Everything is on the table," end quote. Both could run, and because redistricting has been thrown out and maps are being withdrawn, the primary election for congressional seats will now happen in August. And if a current office holder such as Ryan or Hinchey runs for the Democrats, they will need to find a replacement. Hinchey right now is running for re-election this fall against Republican Rich Amador.
Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that students in the state of New York can no longer be labeled incorrigible under legislation signed into law May 4th by Governor Kathy Hochul. The measure was intended to address the racial bias and stigma associated with the term. Hochul also approved a law that bans discrimination, intimidation, and retaliation against any student that files a complaint or exercises their right of private action against for-profit schools. Both measures are meant to address and protect against discrimination in the state schools, especially for students of color. Hochul said, quote, "In New York, our diversity is our strength, and this legislation will help ensure that young women, especially young women of color, are not stigmatized by this outdated term and are protected from abuses of power," unquote. The new law will remove the term incorrigible from New York education law. The term has been defined as students who are, quote, "incapable of being corrected," unquote, or unreformable, and has been applied to students of color, especially girls, who are not considered stereotypically feminine. State Senator Julia Salazar, a sponsor of the bill, said, quote, "This term has been used historically in particular to punish girls and young women of color who resist or do not fit in to sexist expectations of how girls should behave. Last year, we deleted this word from the Family Court Act, and now we are finishing the task by removing it from the education law," unquote. Read more about this story at NewYorkStateOfPolitics.com.
There were several abortion rights rallies in the Hudson Valley May 3rd, and hundreds around the country, hours after a leaked text showed the U.S. Supreme Court overturning the Roe v. Wade decision that legalized the medical operation nationally. WTEN reported the Albany rally was held at West Capitol Park and organized by Upper Hudson Planned Parenthood. There were also rallies in Kingston in Ulster County and in Newburgh and Washingtonville in Orange County. Governor Kathy Hochul attended the Albany rally. New York currently allows abortion, but the decision means more women from other states may travel here for the procedure. At the event May 3rd, Hochul told women from out of the state to, and I quote, "come to New York," end quote. Upper Hudson Planned Parenthood CEO Shelley Hegan said she did not think many women would be able to afford a flight, hotel, and time off from work to come to New York. Hegan said, and I quote, "We know that here in New York, access will be safe and secure, that we are not anticipating any losses of abortion access in New York State. We know that here in the Capital Region, our health centers in the Capital Region, our health centers in Albany, Troy, and Hudson will remain open and will continue to provide abortion to anyone who needs it. But we don't know how some folks will be able to access care at all," end quote.
The Times Union reports that Sidney Albert Albany Jewish Community Center was evacuated early Wednesday after the facility received a bomb threat. Staff urged people to leave at about 6:45 a.m., telling them the JCC had received an unspecified threat. Police later confirmed it was a bomb threat. Albany Police Spokesperson Officer Steve Smith said an employee came into work and had an email in their inbox, unquote. Smith said there was no specific details provided, so the police evacuated the building and then investigated. The incident Wednesday was at least the fifth time since 2017 that a threat has been made against the center located on Whitehall Road. Previous incidents have been unfounded, but the evacuation unnerved members of the center. On February 23, 2020, the JCC was one of almost 20 Jewish community centers to receive a bomb threat. The building was evacuated, but again, authorities found no actual bombs or other dangerous devices. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Liz Montgomery reports for Porcupine Soup that the town of Cairo police there want to increase their staff by 50%. Sergeant in charge Rich Bush said at a May 2nd town meeting that they need to hire a third full-time police officer. Bush said, and I quote, "I'm looking to fix a problem right now. We'll have quite a few shifts where there's nobody working," end quote. Bush added, and I quote, One of our guys works for State Corrections. He's getting stuck at corrections all the time. They can pretty much tell you that you're not leaving. Shifts that he is supposed to work end up not getting covered unless me or the other full-timer covers it on overtime, end quote. The story reports that in April, the town of Cairo Police Department received 919 calls, 107 which required incident reports, but did not say that was an increase or decrease. The story also does not quote town board members on their views on the issue, but claims they will soon vote on hiring another officer. Read more about this story at Porcupine Sioux.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
Now here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Thursday, mostly sunny with a temperature high near 68 degrees. Thursday night, mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 45 degrees. And on Friday, partly sunny with a high near 64 degrees. And Friday night, a chance of showers mainly after 2 a.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 45 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears, in Greene and Columbia counties.
Tune in to all sorts of creative community radio voices on the air on 90.7 FM on Thursday, May 5th, including the Situation Fluxus show from Cheryl Kay is on at 10 a.m. with a conversation with Ryan Paternit, the managing partner of the Birdland Jazz Club in Manhattan, and also an interview with saxophonist and composer Fabian Willman. Alan Skerritt is live from Columbia County after the local news at noon with Crossroads in Rhythm for 2 hours, and it's time for What's the Frequency, Kenneth, and Turn on the News. At 7 p.m., the Singularity Show is on from the Catskill Maker Syndicate, live from West Bridge Street in Catskill. And then Donna and Honey's Love Motel takes over at 8 p.m. with Anna Kanyevskaya and Amanda Lees giving relationship advice. Until 9 o'clock when Andrew O'Connor takes over with the Disco 3000 show live from Toronto. And The Magic Stranger is live from Columbia County at 10 p.m. until midnight on 90.7 FM WGXC.
Get a local event mentioned on All Together Now. Go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
MV Carbon and Zach Layton perform at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill on Friday, May 6th. WGXC will have a live web stream if you can't make it in person. MV Carbon's work focuses on sonic feedback, sound spatialization, sound morphology, and the transformative and deconstructive interrelationship between sound, image, space, and place. She is performing with Zach Layton, who will open the show. He's a guitarist, composer, curator, and teacher based in Brooklyn and Troy, New York. Tune in or turn out for MV Carbon and Zach Layton Friday, May 6th at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill from 9 to 11 p.m. The first hour will be broadcast live on 90.7 FM, and both hours will have a web stream at wgxc.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Thursday, May 5th. Early morning temperatures range from 41 degrees in Mackey to 49 in Tivoli. Soil temperature averages 50 degrees. Keep on gardening. And today will be great for that. A high of 69 happens at 4 p.m. Conditions for most of the day will be cool. Bring a jacket or light hoodie. Winds will be moderate, easing up in the afternoon. Skies will be mostly sunny. UV exposure for the day will be up, so be sure you are protected. Overnight temperatures fall to 48 degrees. Then we get a moist-looking Friday, especially in the afternoon, with a high of 65. 48 degrees again takes us into a Saturday with chances of rain all day and a high of 58. Overnight, the rain ends by midnight and temperatures fall to 42 degrees. Sunday looks like another good day to be out in the yard or hiking or whatever because it's going to have a high of 63 degrees, calm winds, and sunny skies. Pollen levels for today will be high. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 12:35 a.m., high tide at 6:30 a.m., low tide again at 1:31 p.m., then high tide once again at 7:34 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 54 degrees. Sunset today will be at 7:43 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:42 a.m. Looking way up, we see as many as 30 meteors per hour are expected to be seen very late tonight or early tomorrow. They will be from the Eta Aquarius meteor shower. Unfortunately, cloud cover won't be cooperative, with more than 80% of the sky expected to be covered around that time. Solar wind speed is currently 502 kilometers per second at 2.9 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 8 megahertz till dark, then fair across the board with good conditions below 8 megahertz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is too quiet. The current sunspot number is 64. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Most radio shows don't come with a demonstration. But most radio shows aren't Radio Wonderland.
Greatest hits.
Right, so then I take more pieces of live radio, slice them, fit them into the groove, and then in a few minutes you get something like...
In LA, some restrictions apply.
It's radio made completely out of radio. I'm Joshua, but you just call me Radio Wonderland.
10:30 a.m. Saturday mornings till 11.
Some restrictions apply.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Chris Funkhauser and Amy Huffnagel of Rhinebeck, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Find out where the music takes Chris Bowers on the next Deep Threes as he folds hip-hop and soundtrack influences into his evolved jazz sound. Plus tracks from Workabella, Echoplex, Kangdon Ray, and Clinton Shorter. Deep Threes, music beyond boundaries for a digital world.
Tune in to Deep Threes after the noon news on Monday at WGXC 90.7 FM.
You gotta try something.
I got a job at the radio station.
Oh, great, that place. It's dark and dirty and has like, what, those three weirdos who work there?
I still have a flame gun for the cute.
dying to meet you.
Did they tear it out with talons of steel and give you a shot so that you wouldn't feel and washed it away as if it wasn't real? It's just a mistake I won't have to face. Don't give it a name, don't give it a place, don't give it a chance. It's lucky in a way. It must have felt strange to find me inside you. I had unintended to stay. Did you wanna keep it right? Put it to sleep at night. Squeeze it until it could say, you can't be too strong. You can't be too strong. Can't be too strong. Can't be too strong. You decide what's wrong. Well, I ain't gonna cry. I'm gonna rejoice and shout myself dry. Go see the boys, they'll laugh when I say I left it overseas. Yeah, babe, I know it gets dark down by Luna Park, but everybody else is squeezing out a spark that happened in the heat somewhere in the dark. The doctor gets nervous completing the service. His eye rubber gloves and no head. Yes, he fumbles the light switch. It's just another minor hitch. Wishes to God he was dead. But you can't be too strong. You can't be too strong. You can't be too strong. right to wrong, and you can't be too strong, baby. Can't be too right, can't be too wrong.
I'm Tom Rowe from Wave Farm with the Daily Radio News. Motorola's $130 car radio in 1930 for a Model A Deluxe Coupe cost $540 and was the first commercially successful car radio, according to Car and Driver magazine. Inside Radio reports that many radio business officials continue to worry about the threat to the dominance of AM and FM signals in those vehicles. Quote, what's driving a lot of these threats is the fact that you have 12 large global technology audio companies coming into the dash very aggressively to steal your listeners, unquote, said Joe D'Angelo, Senior Vice President of Broadcast at Xperi, a company working with broadcasters to maintain radio's dashboard dominance. Apps such as Apple CarPlay and Android Auto on a dashboard screen look like what consumers see on their smartphones. There's also Android Automotive, an operating system which gives Google control, and of course any Bluetooth connection gets listeners any sound those phones can also receive. Currently, AM/FM radio continues to lead in-car listening with 56% of audio time there tuned in over the air and increasingly through Bluetooth radio signals. Of course, 56% is a lot smaller than the old days when singing was radio's only competition in a car. Xperi is asking what information people in cars listening to the radio want on their dashboards. Emergency weather information, song information, game scores, and the name of the host all scored high. Xperi CEO Steve Newberry said, quote, we are in the process of embracing the screenification of radio, helping the industry move from being an audio medium to being a medium that can compete with Spotify, Pandora, and Sirius XM and all of our other competitors that we have on the dashboard, unquote. Read more radio news at wavefarm.org.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We think this is an effort to try to disrupt the Ukrainians' ability to replenish and reinforce themselves.
A Defense Department spokesperson, John Kirby, said Russia is targeting critical infrastructure in Ukraine. Meanwhile, the European Union is mulling a ban on oil imports from Russia and other new sanctions. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer promised a vote to codify abortion rights into federal law. However, West Virginia's Joe Manchin and Arizona's Kyrsten Sinema still oppose changing filibuster rules, making passage difficult. University of California Irvine law professor Michelle Goodwin says the Supreme Court's leaked draft opinion on abortion rights has other implications.
You see the potential for the Supreme Court to do a bit of cherry picking around equality issues, around privacy issues, about matters that relate to autonomy with people's bodies.
Oklahoma Governor Kevin Stitt signed a bill banning abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy. As in Texas, state residents can sue doctors who perform abortions or anyone who aids or abets an abortion. Fed Chair Jerome Powell on Wednesday announced the biggest interest rate hike in 22 years, a 0.5%, after a quarter point jump in March.
It is essential that we bring inflation down if we are to have a sustained period of strong labor market conditions that benefit all.
In a speech from the White House, President Biden called Senate Republican National Senatorial Campaign Committee Chair Rick Scott's platform extreme, adding it would raise taxes on 75 million families making under $100,000 a year.
I don't want to hear Republicans talk about deficits and their ultra-MAGA agenda. I want to hear about fairness. I want to hear about decency.
The Biden administration continues to defend its creation of a disinformation governance board. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas said the board would help counter messaging used by drug cartels. Republican Kentucky Senator Rand Paul responded.
You think the American people are so stupid they need you to tell them what the truth is? You can't even admit what the truth is with the Steele dossier. I don't trust government to figure out what the truth is.
On Wednesday, New York Attorney General Letitia James announced Intuit, the company behind the TurboTax filing software, will pay $141 million to low-income and military customers who were deceived by promises of free tax filing services. Intuit admitted no wrongdoing, according to a company statement. I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're joined by Rob Hayes, the Director of Clean Water with Environmental Advocates of New York. We've had Rob on before to talk about some of the changes we would like to see, or people would like to see coming out of the New York State Drinking Water Quality Council, which, you know, recently met, and I know there's been a lot of push to try to increase notification requirements when what's called PFAS chemicals, forever chemicals, are detected in the water supply after testing. So, Rob, what happened this week with the Drinking Water Quality Council meeting?
Yeah, happy to provide an update to listeners. And just for folks that aren't aware, the New York State Drinking Water Quality Council is kind of an advisory body to the State Department of Health. It's composed of scientists and water utilities and engineers who all come together, and agency regulators as well, who kind of all come together to deliberate and discuss what new regulations should New York be establishing on toxic emerging contaminants in our drinking water. Because, of course, coming out of, you know, the crises in recent years in Hoosick Falls and Newburgh and elsewhere, there are many, many chemicals that we're not regulating in drinking water and that New Yorkers could be exposed to at really harmful levels, but likely don't know about it and are then exposing to their family to really harmful contamination. So the council convened on Monday, May 2nd, to talk about how they want to regulate 23 toxic PFAS chemicals in drinking water. All of these chemicals have been linked to harmful health effects, including thyroid disease and low birth weight and many other illnesses, but they're currently unregulated in New York, so there are no testing or remediation requirements associated with them. The council made several recommendations at this meeting on how the Department of Health should regulate these chemicals. They proposed setting notification levels for some of these PFAS, and they proposed setting maximum contaminant levels for some of the other PFAS. There are differences between these two categories. Notification levels require statewide testing by all water utilities. And if the level set for the notification level is exceeded, the water utility has to send a letter in the mail to all of their customers saying, this is what we found in the water. Here's the potential harms to your health, and here's anything we might be doing about it. However, notification levels don't require drinking water cleanup. It's just optional for utilities. You know, notification levels are supposed to be a more proactive way to protect public health by letting people know as soon as possible what's in their water. On the other hand, maximum contaminant levels are enforceable cleanup standards. Every water utility's got a test, and if they find too high a level of these chemicals in their water, they have to install treatment technology or find another water source, something to get these chemicals out of people's drinking water.
So the Water Quality Council is advisory. So, you know, have they done the type of recommendations that environmental groups think are adequate? And do we know, you know, what has the Department of Health actually done with it?
On Monday, the council recommended, you know, standards for these PFAS chemicals that were better than what DOH has proposed in the past, but still not strong enough to fully protect public health. You know, clean water advocates and residents from impacted communities have been advocating for years that wherever PFAS chemicals are found in our water, the public deserves to get a letter in the mail telling them what's in their water. And they deserve that when dangerous contamination is found, that contamination is cleaned up and they no longer have to be exposed to those toxic chemicals. And so the council recommended, we'll talk about the notification levels first. They are proposing notification levels for, I believe, 19 PFAS chemicals. They're proposing notification levels of 30 parts per trillion as a group for some of those PFAS and 100 parts per trillion as a group for some of those other PFAS. We've been advocating for notification levels far lower than that, as close to 2 parts per trillion as possible. So there are many New Yorkers under, you know, the council's recommendation that won't receive a letter in the mail about the PFAS chemicals in their water. And so, you know, certainly disappointed that the council did not set those notification levels lower. And they, you know, the Department of Health needs to lower those numbers going forward. When it comes to the maximum contaminant levels, this is an area where clean water advocates really convinced the Department of Health to take a more proactive and health protective approach. The Department of Health has proposed maximum contaminant levels at 10 parts per trillion for several of these PFAS, so much closer to that 2 parts per trillion level that we've been advocating for. And importantly, they're going to set a combined maximum contaminant level for that group of PFAS, so that whenever any combination of these PFAS exceeds 10, their drinking water is going to get cleaned up. It's going to mean a lot more New Yorkers will have cleaner drinking water as a result of that combined standard. And that's something that the Department of Health was not proposing initially and did not want to do, but that clean water advocates and residents from impacted communities have been pushing for the last several months because we know it's a more health protective approach. So ultimately, the council's recommendations were a mixed bag. There was some good, there was some not so good. But really, the full decision-making authority still lies with the Department of Health and ultimately with Governor Hochul. They're now going to have to decide whether to accept these recommendations from the council. And hopefully, the public can convince them over the next several months that they need to set even more health protective standards than what the council put forward.
Now, I'm going to jump to a specific situation in the town where I live, Postenkill. The state had detected BPFOA contamination levels at the local school, and then a bunch of houses were tested. And sort of a two-part question. A lot of the government officials who've spoken, I can't remember whether it's the New York State Department of Health, County Department of Health, or, you know, New York State DEC, frankly, they did not take seriously the 10 parts limit. And so when they exceeded that, they're like, it's only a little bit over it. We're not really that concerned about it. You know, they didn't really seem to abide by the limits that have been set. And then second, what was really strange is that DEC in particular really seems to have very, very little interest in actually trying to figure out where the BPFOA contamination is coming from. And literally publicly have said, oh, it's probably the janitors at the school been using too much, you know, wax on the floor. So, you know, are state officials really taking seriously these, you know, lower limits? And then second, why would DEC not, you know, want to explore where, in fact, the contamination is coming from?
I think there is a real problem with the messaging that state officials have used when communicating with the public about PFAS chemicals in their drinking water. You're right. In many situations, they have tried to downplay the potential risk to human health when PFOA or PFOS or some of these other PFAS have been found in the water. And that's, you know, incredibly distressing because the science, especially on PFOA and PFOS, is very clear. There is no safe level of PFOA or PFOS in drinking water, especially for the most vulnerable populations like infants and pregnant women and folks that are immunocompromised. And so the Department of Health's messaging on this is often about downplaying those risks, saying your water for all populations is completely safe to drink, when in fact that might not be the case for these most sensitive subpopulations. So you're absolutely right that that messaging has to change going forward. State officials have to take the dangers of these chemicals seriously, because that's how you build trust with the public, is being open and honest about what are the risks and what are we doing to address it. To then get to your question about what is DEC specifically doing to address the PFAS contamination in Postenkill.
In 30 seconds.
I think residents have been very frustrated about the pace at which they've been trying to find the source of the contamination. And oftentimes there can be a slowness on the part of the state because they know if they do find a polluter, it's going to be a lot of work to hold them accountable. It's not easy to hold a polluter accountable for cost, as essential as that is. And so it's essential that residents push as hard and as frequently as possible to make sure that the state is doing everything they can to go after the polluters.
So we've been talking with Rob Hayes, Director of Clean Water with Environmental Advocates of New York. I believe the website is eany.org. This has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
This is 2020 new music from the artist Scanner, the title track from his Anna Scent album.